Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is a special edition of On Point, taped before a live audience at South Carolina Public Radio in Columbia, South Carolina. To our guests here and listeners across the country, welcome to On Point Live! Well, South Carolina has always been a critical state on the GOP presidential primary calendar, and for good reason. The state has got a great track record. Since 1980, in every primary season, save one, and come 2020, possibly two, this state has picked the eventual Republican nominee. And why? Well, the state broadly mirrors the Republican base nationwide. And now, over the past several presidential cycles, South Carolina is becoming just as important to Democratic presidential hopefuls. And for the exact same reason. Unlike Iowa and New Hampshire, the majority of South Carolina Democratic voters are African American, mirroring the increasingly diverse base that Democratic operatives see as the party's future. Well, one state Democratic strategist recently said, very likely whoever wins South Carolina will be the Democratic nominee for president in 2020. So today we are here to take the pulse of Palmetto State voters, what matters to them and what they hope for as the days tick toward the 2020 presidential primaries. And we bring you today's show in partnership with South Carolina Public Radio. And we've invited questions from the audience here in Columbia and across the country online. So let's dive right into it. And with us first is Gavin Jackson, host of two great shows here at South Carolina ETV and Public Radio, The Week in South Carolina and the South Carolina Lead Podcast. Gavin, welcome to On Point.
Hey, Meghna. Great to be here.
It's great to have you. So first of all, tell us how, let's just start on the Democratic side. How is the race shaping up at the moment with the Democratic presidential candidates?
Well, it's been very active. And of course, after Labor Day, things have really kicked up. But as you might have seen from polling, this is Joe Biden country. This is Joe Biden's firewall. And that has not changed since the beginning of the year. All polls show that Joe Biden still has a strong 22-point on average advantage over all the other members of this, all the candidates in this field. It's more competitive in other states like Iowa, like New Hampshire, than it is in South Carolina, which is not to say that South Carolina is not important, because it is, but sometimes South Carolina doesn't get the attention it deserves. We don't get maybe the media attention it deserves, so we appreciate you being here, giving some spotlight. But sometimes people do focus on Iowa and New Hampshire, but again, like you said in the intro, It's pretty one-sided in those states, and that's a reason why South Carolina became one of the first in the South primaries for the Democratic Party, was to kind of offset, you know, predominantly white states, Iowa, New Hampshire. In South Carolina, we have 61% black electorate in the Democratic primary, and the Democratic Party. So it's there to counterbalance. It's there to kind of give a little bit of a shift to what we're seeing in those early states, because we do, you know, we do kind of serve as that check.
Mm-hmm. We should note that Nevada also comes just before South Carolina, but South Carolina is the first in the South primary, which is what makes it hugely important, and just a couple of days before Super Tuesday as well.
It's on leap year. It's on leap day this year too. So it's on Saturday, which is good because it gets a little bit more of a voter turnout. But yes, it's 3 days before Super Tuesday, which is 15 other states go to the polls that day. And those are states that include Virginia, North Carolina nearby, Texas, Arkansas, Alabama, these other southern states that might follow South Carolina's lead. They might not necessarily follow what's going on in Iowa and New Hampshire, but the South tends to stick together a little bit when it comes to voting in these primaries. We saw so in North Carolina. So, and the good thing about that, too, is that candidates can come to South Carolina. They can also jump across the border, start getting some exposure. We've saw Elizabeth Warren in Rock Hill recently, and Rock Hill is a city that's right there on the border with North Carolina and Charlotte in Rock Hill in South Carolina. So they can kind of double dip. They can get people coming over, listening to their message, and also, you know, kind of saying, hey, I got to see this candidate X, Y, and Z before, you know, Super Tuesday comes
now
up.
It's still relatively early, right?
We're
in October of 2019. But you're saying that the state hasn't gotten as much attention, perhaps from the national media, but are you seeing a steady flow of the candidates coming through?
Yeah, I mean, when I'm talking about national attention, I think in the past we haven't got enough attention. I think also we have such a huge field this time around. People are pretty excited about it. They're turning out more. They're motivated by the Trump White House and what they're seeing happening in Washington. So we are seeing plenty of candidates come out. But it's interesting to note that we have a lot of these candidates like Senator Cory Booker, like Senator Kamala Harris, Marion Williamson, all these other candidates that have made big like pushes here in South Carolina, visited a lot, but they're not registering in the polls like people like Joe Biden are, like Elizabeth Warren. So it's interesting to note that just because you visit a lot doesn't necessarily mean you're going to translate into poll, you know, moving up in the polls.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
It's also frustrating for those guys too, you can tell.
Sure it is. And we have a terrific panel with us, and I'm going to dive into their view on the reasons why that might be. But tell me, do you feel that on the Democratic side of things that the National Party is seeing South Carolina in a new light with each sort of successive presidential primary season that we have, for the reasons that we talked about here in the introduction, that the Democrats are looking at who makes up their base, who will become a continually larger and more important part of their base, and they see South Carolina as the sort of powerful microcosm for that. So mm-hmm. are candidates even shifting their campaign strategies because of that?
Well, I think South Carolina is definitely an important fixture in the Democratic Party for sure. I mean, we saw a seat get flipped in the midterms last year at the first congressional district for Joe Cunningham. That seat was solidly Republican for more than four decades, and it got flipped by a Democrat. Very slight margin there, but still got flipped nonetheless. Now, South Carolina itself overall is still going to vote for Donald Trump should he be running again as the nominee in November. But at the same time, we have Congressman Jim Clyburn in the state, number three Democrat in the House, and that is no small feat. I mean, Jim Clyburn is a political kingmaker in the state to the point where he can't endorse someone ahead of the primary. Uh-huh. He'll probably do it a couple days before, but I mean, there's a reason why he's not endorsing people before this far in advance, because it would just make it unfair and people won't want to come to South Carolina at that point. So there's a lot of weight to the Democratic Party in South Carolina.
All right. So a couple more questions for you, Gavin. We've talked a lot about the Democrats, and we'll return to them later in the program. But I have to ask you about the GOP primary, mm-hmm. Which is, at this point in time, it's not happening.
Yeah, right now there's a court challenge that's still going to kind of put everything in flux at this point. Again, this is because that they're going to side with the nominee. They're going to side with the incumbent, which is Donald Trump. They feel there's no need to put the taxpayers of South Carolina through this process. However, other people want to see this primary take place. Now there's a court challenge around that. Mark Sanford, who's running for president, our former governor and representative, can't be on the ballot in South Carolina because there's not a primary. So I think him and Bill Weld and a lot of these other candidates who are running against Donald Trump want this to happen, but at the same time, the party, the executive committee of Republican Party in South Carolina voted not to have that primary, mostly for financial reasons, also because they say there's precedent to do that. There's been other primaries in the past where, hey, you know, you go with the incumbent, there's no need, and that's Democrat and Republican.
That's right. In 2012, I believe, mm-hmm, the Democrats didn't have the Democratic primary because of President Obama being mm-hmm. the incumbent. So finally, as you have been traveling across the state and talking to folks, what are sort of the top two or three issues that they want to be hearing from candidates?
So I was up in Rock Hill, like I said, for Elizabeth Warren's rally, and this is the first rally she's had in like some 40 days, which is surprising considering she's number two ranked in the polls here in South Carolina. It's surprising to see she hasn't turned out as much, you know, considering that attention, but I think she's getting the note. I think she's pushing that. But I talked to a woman who was just out of work, was laid off, and her big concern is like, how do I get health care? Mm-hmm. And she's friends with people who are in the service industry who don't have health care either. So it's this need for wanting to get a better health care system in America and prescription drug prices. And then I talked to another gentleman who is a Republican, who voted Republican, who's now on the fence looking at Elizabeth Warren because he thinks she's electable unless she starts talking about Medicare for All, which is a turnoff for him. And he thinks it's a turnoff for a lot of moderates that might cross over and vote for someone like her. So it's interesting to see that dynamic, but healthcare is definitely the number one issue for people.
Okay. Well, Gavin, hang on here for just a second, because if I may, I'd like to introduce now Representative Gilda Cobb-Hunter. She is a Democratic state representative in District 66 in Orangeburg County, a position she's held for the past 27 years, president of the National Black Caucus of State Legislators, superdelegate at the 2016 Democratic National Convention, a social worker and CEO of CASA Family Systems. Representative Cobb-Hunter, let's just pick up where Gavin left off. What are you hearing from your constituents about what they need to hear, would like to hear from the presidential candidates?
Well, I would ditto Gavin's point about health care, the high cost of prescription drugs. That's something that cuts across the board. I would also add that if we're talking communities of color, I have a lot of constituents who are concerned, quite frankly, and are afraid, given the level of violence in communities. There is a lot of interest in having candidates talk about what they would do if they became president to heal this country, to deal with the divisions, and all of those kinds of things. And of course, the notion of whether you're better off now, that age-old standard, are you better off now than you were before? There are a lot of people who would respond to that and say, well, no, you know, I'm a lot worse off. And so when you hear on one hand the point about how great the economy is, how low unemployment is across all sectors, there are folk every day who say, you know, I don't see that. I don't feel that. And so there are a lot of people who are concerned about just surviving, not just surviving, but thriving. And so issues of poverty, issues of race, all of the isms are issues that cut across all communities. And quite frankly, not a lot of the candidates are speaking to those kinds of issues.
They're
Everybody's
not.
Talking about health care, Medicare for all or whatever. But very few of the candidates, for example, that I've heard are talking about poverty. How do you make it so that the reality that some people are experiencing as far as a good job with benefits, how do we make this country work in such a way that that cuts across the, all corners?
So this is really interesting because, you know, stump speeches include lots of talk about jobs and the economy, but you're saying that they're not looking at it or talking about it through the lens of like poverty issues.
Yeah.
But I mean, just I think it was just yesterday, Elizabeth Warren released another plan. This one, a 14-page plan about workers and labor. So it may not be specifically through that lens of poverty, but it is about labor here. And I'm actually going to ask you to pick up. I'm going to ask you a question about that in a second. But that sound means that we're going to have to take a quick break here. So Representative Cobb Hunter, hang on for just a moment. And Gavin Jackson, let me tell you, thank you so much. Reporter and host of South Carolina ETV's Public Affairs Show, The Week in South Carolina, and South Carolina Lead Podcast.
Subscribe.
Gavin, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Go straight to iTunes and subscribe. We are discussing the lead up to the Democratic presidential primary before a live audience here at South Carolina Public Radio in Columbia. And when we come back, we'll bring in more voices on this roundtable talking to leading South Carolina voices, and we'll take some questions from our audience as well. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty here with a live audience at South Carolina Public Radio in Columbia, South Carolina, and this is On Point Live. Well, we are talking about the importance of South Carolina in 2020 presidential politics. It is the first Southern primary state in the nation, and we have a great roundtable of guests joining us today. Representative Gilda Cobb Hunter is a Democratic state representative representing District 66 in Orangeburg County. And now I'd like to bring into the conversation Reverend Tiffany Nolan Boykin. She is a pastor at Wesley United Methodist Church in downtown Columbia. Reverend Nolan Boykin, welcome to On Point.
Thank you.
Also with us is Matt Moore. He's former South Carolina Republican Party chairman, a partner at the political and grassroots strategy firm First Tuesday Strategies, and he previously served as state director for Republican U.S. Senator Tim Scott and outreach director for former Governor Mark Sanford as well. Matt Moore, welcome to you. Thanks so much for being with us. Now, before I get to the two of you, I just wanted to pick up Representative Cobb Hunter with the question I was getting to about Elizabeth Warren's latest plan about workers. So she, you know, she's got all these plans. Now she's got a new one about labor. But as we were hearing earlier, Elizabeth Warren is surging in almost every state except here in South Carolina, and that Joe Biden is looking at South Carolina as kind of his firewall. I'm just wondering, what do you think it is about the former vice president that so many African-American voters in this state are look at as making him the man that they might want to choose?
Well, let me answer that question by suggesting taking issue with the point that Elizabeth Warren is not surging.
Okay.
I think it would depend on what your version or what your definition of surging is. When you look at, for example, the latest Winthrop poll, you see that Elizabeth Warren is second in South Carolina. Would remind you and your audience that we don't vote here in South Carolina until February 29th. Mm-hmm. So there is time. Joe Biden is familiar. He was Barack Obama's vice president. He has personal ties here coming to the state. And so a part of the support for him is wed in the familiarity. The other piece of it is that voters in South Carolina, whether African-American or otherwise, if they vote in Democratic primary, the priority is beating Donald Trump. At this point, Joe Biden seems to be the most electable, and therefore people are like, you know, we want to bet on a sure thing. But again, and by the way, I don't endorse candidates, never have, don't intend to, so I'm able to kind of handicap all of the campaigns, if you will. I would suggest to you that I think a lot of people, particularly on the national level, may be surprised at who winds up where toward closer to February 29th. Now, do I think Joe Biden would lose South Carolina? No, I don't. But I do believe, based on the Winthrop poll, because when you drill down, look at some of the tabs, you look at numbers, for example, that talk about the high percentage of voters who are still shopping around.
Right.
There are still voters who are solid, aren't really rock solid in one particular camp. And so the chore or the job for Bernie Sanders, for Elizabeth Warren, for all Booker and all of the others is to spend time in South Carolina. We are a small state. It's a cheap state to do voter contact and get the message out. And so I think that there is still time for movement in the Democratic field. And very quickly, let me say that for some people, particularly black women, the idea of a candidate with a plan or several plans is refreshing. There are a lot of candidates who welcome the idea of a candidate who goes off talking points, who really seems to know that there are things that require thought. So I would just say to you that I think to some extent that the race in South Carolina is still a bit fluid. Uh-huh. Doesn't mean Biden is not going to win here. But if I were him, I wouldn't count it as done.
Right.
It'll be done. But I think and I'm not a political, I don't do this like you guys, so it's just my little opinion. But I think when we look at the history of South Carolina's primary, the Biden camp needs to be very careful that he doesn't wind up limping out of South Carolina. You know, you can win, but with all the buildup he's had, it has to be a rousing victory, I would think.
I'm hearing you say that Elizabeth Warren's on a trajectory that even
that
if she
y'all
doesn't,
aren't paying attention
yeah,
to.
And yeah, and even if she doesn't win in South Carolina, it could still vault her into Super Tuesday in a pretty powerful
way. There are some
way.
Who hold that opinion, like President Trump says. People are saying.
Well, Reverend Nolan Boykin, let's take it right back down to the level of, you know, what folks are saying, what they need. I mean, what are you hearing from your congregation about the issues that What are the issues that matter to them?
Yeah, so I think in our congregation, there are lots of issues that matter. As was stated earlier, people are very concerned about health care, prescription drugs. People are concerned about gun violence, criminal justice reform. I've heard a lot of people talk about that. I've heard people talk about really one of the big issues that I think that people are most concerned about are race relations in this country and the great divide that there are. And just as the Congresswoman has talked about how none of the candidates.
Representative.
I'm sorry. Representative. I'm sorry. Representative.
Sorry.
Has talked about is just the reality of what are candidates doing or what will they do to begin to try to have some real action in regards to healing in this country, and that there not being such a great divide that continues to exist. I mean, I've heard that from both young adults in my congregation and older adults. And when I say older adults, I mean even folks maybe in their 70s who have said they have felt like race relations in this country are just about as bad as they were when integration began. And I was like, wow. And then I have young adults in my congregation. I have one young adult that I'm thinking about in particular who actually happens to be in a relationship that crossed racial bounds, and very concerned about stares, very concerned about what people say, what they don't say. This person is in a little bit more of a rural area of South Carolina, very concerned about Confederate flags that are everywhere when they go out, those kinds of things. But race relations, the divide, those kind of discrimination mm-hmm. issues, I think that's really big. And like I said, a lot of those other issues are they're there. They're going to be there. The inequity in regards to wages, gun violence, race relations, health care, all those things are things that people are concerned about.
Yeah. Well, we should note that this is one thing that the media, hold my hand up here also, tends to do all the time is, you know, we talk about folks as if they form a monolithic voting
right.
block,
yes.
right.
right? Which they never do.
That's right.
There's no such
That's
thing
right.
as like quote unquote the black voter or the
right.
white South Carolina Republican voter.
That's right.
So let me ask you. I mean, within your congregation itself, do you see? You talked about young folks and older folks. Is there a difference, like a generational difference between maybe who? I don't know if you talked about the level of candidates. Like do younger members of your congregation, are they looking at Joe Biden? Are they looking at some other candidates?
So I think that certainly a large number of the older members of our congregation are looking at a Joe Biden for a lot of the reasons that the representative has already mentioned. Just the kind of their loyalty to the Obama campaign, the idea that also that Joe Biden is moderate enough to perhaps even be able to bring over some Republicans or some independents or kind of centralists. And I even have also at the same time, I have some probably middle-aged adults that feel the same way. They feel like mm-hmm. Joe Biden can beat Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And I do think that across the board, people are very much so, whoever can beat Donald Trump, it doesn't matter who the candidate is, but if they can beat Donald Trump, they want that person to be elected. But at the same time, I also have, and I'm glad that you said that, because it's not monolithic in my congregation. I've also had people in their late 60s, 70s who are Elizabeth Warren fans and believe that she will be able to come through with some of the political promises that she has made. I have folks who are Tom Steyer fans because they feel like he is probably the least politician of the group and that he will put the country's needs beforehand instead of then party. Right. So, I mean, it really is not monolithic in any way whatsoever. Some younger folks, some are interested in Bernie, but they think that Bernie might be a little too old. There's some people also say the same thing about Joe Biden. So, I mean, I can't say all my young people think this, or all my middle-aged people think this, or all my older folks think that. I've heard a lot of different things.
Yeah. Well, Matt, let me turn to you now, because obviously we've been talking a lot about the Democratic primary because there's a ton of candidates and a lot of interest in it this time around in South Carolina. I just wanted to briefly get your take on the fact that at this point in time, the South Carolina Republican Party isn't going to have the presidential primary in this state. I mean, is it a big deal?
It's a fairly big deal. I think the current leadership of the party genuinely believes that they're making the right choice. There's a pretty good case to be made that the president should be on the ballot, could come out of South Carolina with a huge win, head on to the other states he needs to secure the nomination. You saw the leadership in New Hampshire and Iowa sort of quickly say, you know what, we're not doing that. And so there's a pretty good case to be made that the president maybe could use at this stage of the game, or even in February of next year, a shot of momentum coming out of South Carolina, going to the next states beyond Nevada, particularly, and mm-hmm. beyond.
But is there a concern that because South Carolina has this mix of conservative Republicans, moderate Republicans, as well, some maybe socially liberal but fiscally conservative folks? You know, it is kind of a good mirror of different aspects of the Republican Party that, yeah, I mean, there's no question that if the primary were held, the president right. would win the primary.
88%, right.
But you know, is there a concern that maybe some voters, there would be a critical mass of voters who would check the box for somebody else?
So we polled races across the state and did some polling last week in about 10 different Senate districts in the state for Republican candidates, and the president's 90% popular in all of those places. There might be some sort of grievance votes cast in certain places, but I would say those folks have either gone away to be independents now, or they care about, you know, small issues and don't have much disagreement with the party, but might have it with Trump in general.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we have a question from the audience here about the lack of a GOP primary in this presidential election cycle. And just to note, it's not, this is, again, just to repeat, it's not unprecedented. It has happened in both parties before. But a member of the audience wants to know if the refusal to have the presidential primary in South Carolina might have unanticipated negative consequences.
It might. South Carolina has a very troubled history on primaries when it comes to race and the Pandora's box that's opened by parties claiming to be private. And leading to unintended consequences. The 1940s, for example, the Democratic Party had this issue. And in recent years, both parties have claimed at different times that they're private entities. Well, when you have publicly funded elections, that changes right. things. Representative Cobb Hunter is looking at me right now. And it sets a higher standard. Parties can be private, but they can't violate due process and the right to vote and those kinds of things. So, you know, the party may look at South Carolina in a future cycle. I made this argument when I was chair. And say, you know, you guys didn't do this right, and you bungled it, and now you pay the price. And South Carolina has had the first primary for the Republicans since 1980, and take great pride in that. So always try to be really careful about how we handle the primary. Okay.
So I want to ask all of you a set of questions mm-hmm. that for all of you to give us your sense on, because you know we can talk about Democratic and Republican divides. We can talk about generational divides. But I also want to explore what sort of the meaningful differences and challenges are. And I underscore the word meaningful here in South Carolina. Because, for example, and Matt, I'll just start with you. Do you think that there has been enough attention focused on the challenges that come with the differing economic fortunes of folks who live in rural places in South Carolina versus in South Carolina's cities?
Yeah, so that's a growing divide even in South Carolina. I talked on the way here to a farmer who's struggling under the tariffs that have been in place for a while now, and commodity prices, and trying to time the market and losing, and seeing the schools that are in the I-95 corridor in South Carolina, they're still struggling. 50 years past Jim Crow with racial issues and fundamental issues we can't seem to solve. But there are also suburban issues now of growth and management of growth in Charleston, explaining Charleston's story, but also trying to integrate new people there and manage growth. There are a lot of stress points in South Carolina.
Mm. Well, Representative Cobb Hunter, what are your thoughts on sort of the rural-urban dichotomy here in the state?
I would agree that is a real challenge. I represent a rural district. I don't think we've done enough as a state to really bring rural districts in line with so that they can be competitive. And quite frankly, a part of why we've not been successful is we keep using old approaches in this 21st century in rural communities because of the lack of infrastructure and all that is needed to recruit and bring in major industries, the big whale, as they call it. We've got to have leaders in these communities look internally and figure out ways that they can create economic opportunities that don't involve bringing in industries. Quite frankly, one of the challenges that we don't want to talk about that I think is important is this whole image of us as a right-to-work state. Mm. That's true across the South, and there are a lot of people who believe that the notion of right to work is right to work less. When you think about wages, when you think about what we make, what we pay, it trickles down. Education is something we've talked about. Gavin and I were talking about this earlier. Every year at the beginning of the two-year session, we trot out these plans that gather dust on the shelf. So I would say one of the biggest challenges that I see and that I work hard on is this notion of pay. What are we paying mm-hmm. people? We've got state employees in South Carolina who are on food stamps, who qualify for food stamps. We've got teachers who have two jobs just to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. We've got to do something about the economic inequities in our state.
Well, Reverend Nolan Boykin, we've got about 30 seconds before we have to take our next break, but I want to just hear the beginning of your answer to this rural-urban question.
I think that people are hurting in rural areas. I think people are hurting in more urban areas, and so I think that that is just a reality. I know I'm from a more of a rural area, and I think jobs and the availability of jobs is huge. I mean, I've come from an area in the corridor of shame where plants closed, I don't know, say 15 years ago. Jobs have not come to those areas. My mother, all five of her sisters work in the same plant. None of them are employed. All of them have kind of taken a retirement at this point. But, I mean, the reality is there's not used to be a lot of industry in those places. That doesn't exist anymore. So there's a lot. Unemployment continues to be very high.
Well, we are here in Columbia, South Carolina, in front of a live audience talking about South Carolina's importance in the 2020 presidential race and also issues here within the state as well. We are talking with a terrific roundtable of guests, and we have to take a quick break. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty before a live audience here in Columbia, and this is On Point Live. We will be right back.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty here at South Carolina Public Radio in Columbia, South Carolina, in front of a great live audience for On Point Live. And we are taking a look at South Carolina as a crucially important 2020 presidential primary state and the issues that South Carolina voters care about and want to hear about. And I'm joined today by a terrific panel of guests. Reverend Tiffany Nolan Boykin joins us. Representative Gilda Cobb Hunter is with us. And Matt Moore is with us as well. Reverend Nolan Boykin, I'm just going to start with you, actually.
Okay.
Obviously, there's a lot of news coming out of Washington around the question of an impeachment inquiry. On a day-to-day basis, how much of that is actually on the minds of folks in your congregation?
I think on a day-to-day basis, there are people in my congregation who know that they feel like the country is not being led by the person who is most able to represent how they feel and how they are. And so I think lots of people are not so stuck on whether or not our president is going to be impeached, but they are clear that they don't want this president to be a second term president.
Okay. And Matt Moore, what do you think?
I think the too many political strategists say that people are concerned about jobs and paychecks and table dinner time issues. I heard one of the former Clinton advisors say this last week, but if you walk around neighborhoods at night and anywhere in this state, and see Fox News, MSNBC, CNN on every TV, every person on social media. The country on both sides is amped up, mainlining social media and talk news every day. I think it matters a lot in terms of how it shapes impressions of Washington being broken, and it presents the opportunity in 2020 for a Democrat to come along possibly and say, let's calm down here and let's take a breath. And that might be the message of Joe Biden if he's the nominee for the Democrats.
Matt Moore, that is not the answer I expected from the former South Carolina GOP party chairman.
People are amped up and got this in the bloodstream, the social media, talk news. I see it everywhere we go, every city I travel to. People are watching on their phones. It is real in this culture we live in.
Interesting. Representative Cobb Hunter, what do you think about that?
Well, I think people are talking about it. A lot of people are sick of talking about it and want it to just be done already, one way or the other. I would agree with everything with both Matt and the Reverend. It's just so depressing on some levels. And it's like it's all-consuming. And it's time for it to be done. A lot of people feel that way. Mm. But I think the impact on the election is probably going to be minimal based on the divisions in this country. What impeachment will do is either reinforce the anti-Trump forces or the pro-Trump forces, and you've got that little small group in the middle who will wind up deciding who the next president will be. You didn't ask this, but I would caution Democrats on trying to throw everything but the kitchen sink at Trump in terms of this impeachment inquiry. I believe that he is guilty of a whole lot of things, but being able to prove that is different. I believe while the moment is here, Democrats need to focus on the Ukraine issue and go ahead and allow something, maybe the emoluments. But I just hope that we don't make the mistake of trying to just bring everything out. I think that's something that's best left to history to talk about as far as what kind of president he is, what he was guilty of. There's one charge, maybe two, that are very clear, very easy for the public to understand. And, you know, public's attention is very short nowadays. So, well, he did say he likes low, you know, that point. So I'll just stop with that.
Okay. Well, you know, so this is it's actually something that we put out a call to our listeners to share their comments and questions and stories about South Carolina and the 2020 election cycle. And a lot of it did have to do with the president. Maybe, Matt, this is exactly to your point, but let me just turn one of the comments to you and get your response to it, Matt. Ben says, as a former Republican voter, since 2016, I feel like a veil has been lifted from my eyes regarding the GOP. This is Ben, I'm quoting Ben, via their spineless support of President Trump. Nothing speaks to the erosion of our country's democratic values like the suspension of the Republican primaries in our state. And he says, I plead with fellow South Carolinians to stand up for our country's values by supporting impeachment and voting Democrat in 2020, no matter who wins the primary.
Is there a question in that?
Oh, my.
Hi, Ben.
Okay, well, he says conservatives have been duped. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I would say the vast majority of Republicans in South Carolina don't agree. Yeah. Trump is the most beloved president for conservatives that we've seen in recent history. And it's a really, to some people, like Ben, I guess, like a perplexing, confusing thing. But I think what the base Republican voter in South Carolina likes most is that Trump is keeping his promises that he made in the campaign. And they feel as though he's fighting for them. That's what we hear the most when we do focus groups and do polling, is that Trump is fighting. We might agree with the style or what he's done in the past or his personal life, but he's fighting.
Well, you know, what's interesting is I think you're exactly right about the fact that people are energized, amped up about virtually everything that has to do with President Trump, to be honest, and especially the question of this impeachment inquiry. But there's also this funny sort of divide that when you just talk to folks on an individual basis about the question we started off with, like, what do you need to hear from the candidates? I personally have almost never heard someone's answer begin with, I need X to be done about President Trump. it gets back to the kitchen table issues. Mm-hmm. And for example, just recently, four mayors of southern cities wrote this open letter to the Democratic candidates and said, look, they believe that the road to the Democratic nomination it goes through the South here. And they said, if you really want to win the Democratic primary, these four southern mayors, including, by the way, the mayor of Columbia, said that they need to hear more about federal investment in affordable housing. They need to hear more about community development grants, tougher standards for financial institutions to comply with the Community Reinvestment Act, and then supporting small businesses, infrastructure, then criminal justice reform and the environment. But I was really taken by this letter because essentially we have mayors of cities in the South saying our main streets need help. Our people need help in terms of where they live. And that's really ultimately what matters. So, Reverend, let me just turn to you. Are you hearing enough of that in the level of detail that, for example, these mayors are asking for? Do you think your congregants are hearing enough of that from the candidates?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that my congregants are hearing enough of that kind of thing from the candidates as to how are you going to affect my everyday life and how are you going to change those things. I do think that those are the kinds of things that they're looking to hear. They want to know, what are you going to do about health care? What are you going to do about prescription drugs? Because that's a bill that I've got every week or every month that I've got to make sure that I'm being taken care of in that way. And so I do think that my congregants want to hear more about that. I also think, too, that my congregants also are not limited to thinking that it is only about economics. I do think that morality matters to the people that I serve. I think that it matters to them that, yes, the economy may be doing well, but not only at the expense of all of the other issues that we look at in regards to ethnicity and to race and to gender and all of the varying different things that people talk about in regards to, particularly from a Christian perspective, who makes up the kingdom? And do those people's lives matter? And are those people considered when all of these decisions are made that affect millions and millions of lives every single day? So I think that my congregation wants economic development and wants streets paved and all those kind of things, but I also think they want a moral leader and they don't feel like they have one.
Representative, what do you think?
Well, I have to pick up on the point that the Reverend just made. People want a moral leader and they don't feel they have one. That, of course, doesn't apply across the board when you look at white evangelicals and the fact that they have anointed Trump and said, some of them, that he is chosen by God. The other thing, real quickly, on the point about this perception that he's fighting for us, I think underneath that, the underlying theme is the issue that the Reverend and I have talked about, and that is of race. And we need to deal with that, and nothing is going to really happen systemically until we come to terms. All of us are afraid of being called racist, and so we all just kind of dance around the edges and skirt around it. The mayors are absolutely right. All politics is local. People want to know, how is it affecting my everyday existence? What are y'all going to do about the things that matter to me? And we need to have real conversations about those kinds of things. As a state legislator, I know that without local, my county councils and the leadership that they are providing, the mayors, all of that stuff happens down here. Unfortunately, and I'm planning to introduce legislation which will require a civics be taken, because people don't understand government and the role of government, and we have all these far-fetched notions of what government is supposed to do and how it's supposed to do. And so the notion of checks and balances, separation of state, that is a term that seems to have been way back in the day, and we need to bring it forward so that people understand what proper governance is like and how it looks, because it's clearly something that a lot of people nowadays don't have a clue about.
Okay. Well, so when you say that we're not talking enough about race, I mean, the we includes both parties. So, Matt, I mean, let me just ask you, how do South Carolina Republicans or members of the South Carolina Party and the Republican establishment, I mean, is race discussed a lot?
Well, what's fascinating about South Carolina, the Republican Party, is it's sort of a been a leader the past decade or so on race, with Tim Scott being the first African-American senator, from the South since Reconstruction, Governor Nikki Haley, of course, being the first female minority governor of South Carolina. So I think a lot of Republicans in South Carolina would point to that and say progress is being made. But to the broader point about South Carolina's racial history, which is very sordid and awful, a lot of it, there does not seem, to Representative Cobb Hunter's point, to have been a reconciliation with that. And there's been some. Sadly, it took the shooting in 2015 mm-hmm. at Mother Emanuel AME to begin that conversation and the lives lost. God bless them. To begin that conversation, and it's ongoing, but it has not been reconciled yet.
Well, Reverend Nolan Boykin, actually, because Matt rightly mentioned the effect that that shooting had, I'm just wondering, I mean, you lead a congregation. Mm-hmm. Did it change the mood, the tenor? It's been a while now, but like, that's a major event that, A, we should never forget, and B, it doesn't fade very fast.
Sure. Sure. I think that one of the things that's so horrible about that situation is we are a downtown congregation, mm-hmm. downtown church, and there are definitely several people in our congregation. I remember not that long ago, there was one of our congregants after that shooting, and then also the shooting of the Jewish synagogue,
yeah,
that
Pittsburgh.
People were afraid to come to church. People are afraid to come. People are very concerned about what are the security methods do we have? What is the access outside of the building in case somebody comes in that looks strange? Should we be checking bags? Should we allow people to come in? And to be quite frankly, should we allow white men to come in that has a book bag on? What I mean, those are real fears, real concerns. And it's also one of those kind of things where I think people who have my job have the responsibility of also reminding people that we also cannot live in fear. And we also can't allow that fear to dictate whether or not we're going to continue to worship or whether we're going to continue to go to school or go to our jobs or wherever it is that we're going. But yes, definitely it changed things.
Yeah. Well, you know, we are out of time, but I do this all the time. It makes them crazy. I do want to close with one more question because we're also in a world where, I mean, Matt, you pointed this out, because of social media, because of national media, presidential races, even though there's like sort of retail politicking in the early primaries, they're pretty much national races from the start, right? So what do you want? Like, I'm just going to ask you to each identify one thing that you would want this national audience to know better about South Carolina, okay, that would help folks understand what's the one thing you would want folks listening nationally to better understand about South Carolina, given that it is so important in the 2020 presidential race. And Matt, I'll start with you.
South Carolina's economy depends on the global economy, and that is a huge change over the past 30 years.
Okay.
I think that I would want the national audience to know and be very clear that South Carolina is not monolithic, and there are a lot of voices, there are a lot of opinions that are here that ought to be heard, and I'm so grateful that you all decided that some of those voices should be heard even tonight. And I just think that that's really important. And I think we didn't talk about it a lot tonight, but I would love to be able to talk more about Black women and how loyal they have been to the Democratic Party as a loyal base to this party, and what that means, and the number of Black women who are here. And so that's probably more than what you wanted to hear. We can talk more later, but those are a couple of things.
I always want more, but the clock tells me I can't have it.
Well, and I'll help the clock by saying I agree with everything that those guys have said. South Carolina is a very diverse state. Come on down, visit, spend the money. We've got great places.
That's right.
Well, Representative Gilda Cobb Hunter, Democratic State Representative for District 66 in Orangeburg County, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you for being here. And Reverend Tiffany Nolan Boykin, pastor at Wesley United Methodist Church in downtown Columbia, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Matt Moore, partner at the political and grassroots strategy firm First Tuesday Strategies and former South Carolina Republican Party chairman, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I really must extend a great amount of gratitude to South Carolina Public Radio for hosting us here in Columbia. And for folks who want to see more photos from our trip and also maybe some glimpses of the incredible food that we've had here in Columbia, and keep up with our conversations with the 2020 candidates, definitely go to our website, onpointradio.org. You can also follow us on Instagram at onpointnpr. And as we continue our 2020 election coverage, we want your input on the stories we should be following. So send us your thoughts to onpointnpr@gmail.com. And thank you to our live audience who joined us in person, and those of you listening across the country. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point Live.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.